Hey everyone, it's been a while since we've published an episode. We've been working hard on our Smart Village project, and just recently we launched our campaign. You can check out the page at futurethinkers.org/village. There's a video there, there's a description of the vision, there's pictures, and recently we did an appearance on the STOA to talk about the project. And with permission from Peter, we're publishing that interview and Q&A here.
The questions were freaking awesome. I think we did a pretty good job of explaining the whole concept, and I had just finished editing the all of the drone shots together from the visit that we did on the property a couple weeks ago. So lots of really cool shots of the property and the river and the nature in that area. That's all going to be embedded on the show notes page, and you can check that out by going to futurethinkers.org/129.
And to check out the STOA, go to thestoa.ca. They have a lot of great guests coming on every day. They have tons of events, so definitely make sure to check them out.
Hey, this is Future Thinkers, where we talk about how to adapt to a changing world, build more resilience, upgrade culture and society, and create meaning and purpose. With your hosts, Mike Gilliland and Yuvi Ivanova.
Boom. Welcome everyone to the STOA, place where we cohere in dialogue about what matters most at the knife's edge of this very moment. I'm the steward, Peter Lindbergh, and today we have the Future Thinkers in the STOA, Yuvi Ivanova and Mike Gilliland, two superstars in the sense-making web, and they're going to talk about something that they're working on, a special project called the Smart Village. So I've known Mike and Yuvi for a while now. We were a part of this secret sense-making mafia mastermind group. And then all of a sudden, like, they're like, hey, Peter, we're doing a Smart Village. I'm like, what? what is this? This sounds awesome. And then they recently released this epic video that we're all going to watch in a moment. So yeah, I'm really excited. I don't know much about the project. This is sort of like a preview for the STOA family to get an idea of it. So how today is going to work is, in a moment, I'm going to take Mike in, and Mike's going to share a few videos, maybe an exclusive one on the Smart Village. And I'll be asking them some questions. And if you're familiar with the whole kind of STOA jam, write your questions down anytime in the chat box. I'll call on you to unmute yourself during that portion, and then you just unmute yourself and then ask your question to Mike and Yuvi. If you don't want to be on YouTube, because this will be on YouTube, just indicate that in the chat when you ask your question. So that being said, Mike, Yuvi, how's it going?
It's going good. Quite the intro. Thanks. This has been a long time coming. This is about 10 years of planning.
Mm-hmm. Planning, visioning, thinking about it. Now we're finally doing it. It's funny how COVID accelerates certain things. And that's what's happened for us. It seemed like it was kind of an uphill battle trying to get this thing off the ground before. And then COVID hit and suddenly everybody's like, wait a second, I want to live in a smart village. I don't want to be in the city. This sucks. So.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't know that you guys were thinking about this for 10 years now.
Yeah, since we first started dating, really, this is something we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was that your pickup line? Like, I'm going to a smart village one day. Like, me too.
I think my pickup line was, I have an 88 key keyboard at home, semi-weighted. Come play it.
that would win me over.
True.
For sure.
Yeah. This is, you know, and we've asked ourselves, like, we've been traveling around for a while too. We were kind of doing the digital nomad thing since 2012, living in Southeast Asia, living in Europe. And we had originally, we didn't have a location in mind for where we would want to do this thing. We just thought wherever we were at the moment felt like the right place. And so we kind of started a public initiative to build a smart village in Bulgaria, where we were living at the time. And it was a challenge. And then COVID hit and we had our first child and it became clear we needed to be back home in Canada, where we're from, and be close to family and, you know, raise our son in more of a community with a network we already have, with kind of a culture that we understood. And so we moved back in the midst of COVID and then just put the idea out there to the world. that we're going to build this center in British Columbia. And then a lot of people came out of the woodwork and started helping. And within about a month or so, in fact, a lot of those people are in this call right now too, I can see.
Hey guys.
Hey Tyson, hey everyone. yeah, so people came out and started helping us find properties. And then we looked at a few different properties, found this one in Caslow, or near Caslow, in the Kootenays. That is 107 acres with a bunch of existing properties with
structures
and with solar panels. And we had a conversation with the owners, and the owners wanted to partner with us. They listened to our podcast and loved the vision and offered to partner with us on this project.
So. Yeah, they've been running it as a farm since the 90s, as an organic farm. And they, you know, saw that partnering with us would take it to the next level and add all the, you know, technology component and the network and the community aspect that we want to bring. And so, yeah, it's unfolded very organically in a very cool way. Just like I constantly feel like we're at the right time and in the right place doing this.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
totally. So I have a bunch of questions, but might be prudent to watch that video. Because sure. That gives you a preview, and then we can kind of jump off from there.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
And there's some exclusive content too, apparently.
Yeah, so I have two videos here, actually. One I just finished exporting right before we started, and it's a collection of all the drone shots. We took a drone out there and just went nuts for a couple of days with it. So we've got lots of really cool aerial footage of the property that nobody has seen yet. There's barely any of it in the main intro video. So I can set up the intro video first, and then if you guys want, we'll check out the drone shots here. So
there are so many ways that cities make life unsustainable and miserable. The noise, the expense, overcrowding, social unrest, pollution, and the separation from nature. People are isolated and stuck in these tiny little boxes that make it impossible to feel connected and be healthy or even see the stars.
These cities are built on an extractive and consumptive economic model that destroys ecosystems and is held together with fragile supply chains and the illusion of infinite growth. We really don't have to live this way. We could build our villages, towns, and cities on the principles of biomimicry to be resilient, decentralized, diverse, and attuned to the local environment.
But we're going to need a testing ground, a place where new systems and ideas can be prototyped and where old wisdom can regain its place in modern culture. That's exactly what we're doing with the Future Thinker Smart Village, a place for regenerative living, learning, and creating. We're Mike and Yubi. We're the hosts of the Future Thinkers podcast, a long-running show featuring guests like Daniel Schmachtenberger, Jordan Hall, Ken Wilber, Jordan Peterson, and more. We teach courses and workshops on sovereignty, resilience, sense-making, and collective intelligence practices. And in nearly every one of our episodes, we ask the question, how can we adapt to the changing world we live in?
We're aiming to create a place for living, learning, creating, and growing, with programs that help people recognize their own sovereignty and interconnectedness. We focus on regenerating the individual, the community, and the ecosystem.
Our idea is to connect networks of smart villages to build a set of blueprints, practices, and a knowledge base of what works and what doesn't.
We're moving onto a 107-acre off-grid property in the heart of the Kootenays in British Columbia, Canada. When you visit or live there, you'll be able to stay in a variety of sustainably built homes, and over time we'll be adding more new and experimental dwellings. If you want to get your hands dirty, there'll be lots of projects to contribute to, like facilitating events and education programs, building new structures, or working in the garden. We also want to encourage participants to start sustainable businesses and be part of the local economy.
If you're a content creator, you can use our multimedia studio to make videos, podcasts, music, design, and other forms of art. Storytelling and knowledge sharing is going to be a huge part of this village, which is why it's one of the first things we're going to set up. We already have an electric vehicle sharing program, so if you need to get picked up or you just want to tour around the area, you can do it. You can also take part in all kinds of outdoor activities and adventures in the area. The Kootenays have some amazing nature to explore, and we plan to use only clean transportation to keep it that way. Over the next 5 years, we're going to be expanding what we do. One of our earlier projects will be to build a makerspace with CNC machines, laser cutters, 3D printers, and more. The idea is to have a creative playground where many ideas can be tried and tested.
If you're already a listener of the Future Thinkers podcast, you're going to love the programs that we'll be hosting, including co-working and co-living stays that are focused on developing regenerative practices, workshops and festivals, hackathons and idea incubators, outdoor and wilderness adventures, and lots of personal development retreats.
We've partnered with friends, family, and the previous owners of the property, and we're looking to start building and running events in 2021. If you're interested in visiting, living there, sponsoring, partnering, or investing in the project, go to futurethinkers.org/village and click the contribute button. And if you're inspired by the vision, share the project with your friends. We're really excited to bring this project to life, together and with your help.
It's so painful watching that again. I hate my voiceover. Yeah. So, we could probably open it up to questions for a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, sure. I have some questions. So if you have any questions, start throwing them in the chat. I'll ask the questions that someone just threw. Like how many people will be living on site? It's a good one to
So because with. The idea is to have it kind of like a lab. We are not going to grow it very fast in terms of how many people live there. I think we will cap it at 50 adults, but that will be over several years. To start, we'll just have a couple families living there because there are already some existing structures that can accommodate that. But as we build more structures and rezone parts of the property to fit more houses, we'll increase the capacity. One thing that's really important for us is to make sure that social cohesion is there, that we all get along and that, you know, we're all there purposefully working on something working on the project itself or related projects that help grow and create the culture. For the first little while, it'll be quite small, but it'll grow over time.
There's a point to this I think is worth illustrating here that wasn't quite included in the video, which is the storytelling and the kind of, we want to build a documentary around this and then do more of these types of projects in the region and then around the world.
Yeah.
So we want to figure out what works and what doesn't, document our failures and successes as we go forward, get a series of either a web episode or some sort of Netflix series going. And so that's why I put so much effort into the initial video and the selling of this idea out there, because I think that's going to play a big role in inspiring people to want to do this thing themselves to start more of these villages.
Yeah. And the idea is not to create this as like, this is the ultimate thing, more like this is a testing ground. Yeah. And here's what works for us. Here's what worked and here's what didn't. And people everywhere in the world can apply these same principles to start villages of their own. Mm-hmm. Rather than having like, this is the ultimate retreat center that you can, you know, come to.
Right. So you're leading the way and by example, and then as an experiment and a test to see what works and hopefully inspire other people. Have you taken inspiration from any existing kind of intentional communities, current or prior?
Individuals we're paying a lot of attention to. We started a regenerative smart village series on the podcast, and we've interviewed a number of people who are doing really interesting projects of their own. Not exactly the same model, but some similar crossover elements.
I would say that we've also taken negative inspiration from existing eco-villages, like on what not to do. And this is where we saw an opportunity to do something different.
Yeah, the feeling that I get looking at it, and we haven't been to a lot of different smart villages, but the feeling I get generally from our research is that there are a lot of people kind of escaping either technology or society or the impending apocalypse or like any number of things. People, there seems to be this escapist attitude, and that's not what we want to do. We want to figure out ways to template a different way of living and also some sort of new culture, because that's going to be kind of the founding seed that everything else blossoms from. So culture is and the ability to be in relation, which is essentially what you guys are doing here in the Stoa, like that's going to be a very critical part of this.
And what is the sort of the sourcing application onboarding process like for people who want to live in this smart village?
Well, we're working through a lot of the details. I mean, there are so many moving parts. We've only been back in Canada since March. So there's a lot to figure out. We don't exactly know what the onboarding process is. And I don't think there's an easy way to figure out how well we're going to gel with people and how much people can contribute until they're actually on the property, staying there for a short-term period of time and working how they can contribute.
Yeah, so, it's been an emergent process and learning process. So that's one of the things that we're pretty transparent about is that we don't know how to do this. We're figuring it out as we go. And I think that's really exciting. And like, we're kind of approaching it as a startup, you know?
Yeah.
Startup mentality, like it's okay to fail. And we know that, you know, we'll figure out a lot of things as we go. So.
Yeah. But as far as people coming on, I think we're going to try and expand. One of the first projects we're going to do is to make a bit of an RV park so that we can have more people coming on. So we can have higher levels of accommodation and then people can test it out. And then there are more structures and there'll be more spots for more permanent dwellings over time.
Mm-hmm. But for the first little while, we're focusing on people who are entrepreneurial to, you know, in order to build a culture and build out the community and kind of inject a lot of ideas, but also the ability to execute on those ideas.
Yeah.
For that documentary, I think that's a brilliant kind of like artistic experiment to have along with this project. Are you going to release it in segments or are you going to release like a whole big one?
Well, generally when you're pitching to Netflix or any of these kind of bigger stations, you need a pilot. You probably want a couple of episodes and then you pitch that idea ongoing for a period of time until you get picked up and funded to do a whole season. So I love the idea of focusing on a web series and just having no finite end to that. And then as we make more episodes, then just be pitching all along.
Yeah. And Mike's background is in film and audio. So he's got connections to a lot of people working in the industry. So yeah.
Super cool. Ryan, you had a question on governance. If you can unmute yourself. Where is he here? Ryan Campbell. Okay, I'll read it on his behalf then. What will governance or decision-making hierarchies look like? Do you have protocols or software to help facilitate social cohesion?
Yeah, that is something we've been developing a good amount of experience with our group calls in the last couple of years. And we're kind of sticklers for minimum hierarchy
rules.
And minimum mm-hmm. rules. And a lot of the time in those group calls, people will call for more rules, but we resist that. Like, let's figure out how to build our interpersonal conflict resolution abilities so that we don't have to account with a rule set for every possible disagreement or problem. Let's just figure out how to get good at being in disagreement and resolving it.
Yeah.
So I intend, and so the short answer is no, we don't have a lot of kind of governance structures. We have right now the way things are set up is that there's a company that will own the land. And so the actual hard assets and a degree of the voting rights will be represented through certain types of shares in the company.
Which different people will own.
Yeah. So we don't exactly have that perfectly laid out, but there will be different shares that represent decision-making. And you might not care about the decision-making of every aspect of the village. You might have a specific areas of expertise. So we're hoping to represent that.
And because we're starting with a small number of people, the governance structure of just like we sit in a circle and we talk it out until we arrive at a conclusion and until we're on the same page, that I think it'll be sufficient for the first while. Mm-hmm. As the village grows and as there are more decision makers and more different projects, then we will work out what kinds of decision-making structures work best for that scenario.
The other thing is we're pretty aware of the kind of natural human tendency to create bureaucracies. Like, it's something we are contending with in our group calls anyway, with the demand to create rules. And we're very resistant to that. So in that sense, yeah, I think we're good at that. We'll just keep doing what we're doing. I think it's working. But there will be times where there's kind of a disagreement. So I think what we might end up doing is having between UV and I a slightly higher amount of voting shares so that we can swing it. If there's a stalemate, we can swing it in either direction. And we're pretty good with decision making. Like we can make fast decisions. And if it's really split down the middle, then fine, we'll break the tie.
I just had this vision of like it becoming Jersey Shore with the documentary series, and then the disagreements are like amplified. Yeah. And the drama ensues. Oh,
I pay a lot of attention to the storytelling. My parents, like since we've come back to Canada, we're staying with my parents. So they, you know, HGTV is on all the time upstairs, and I mean, they're watching like homesteading channels and stuff like that. And I always watch these shows and think, I hate the manufactured drama that they insert into all of these shows. I would really not want to do that. So let's have real conversations recorded. Let's not try and, you know, make it more entertaining for entertainment's sake.
And I'm sure there'll be lots of failures and hilarious situations to make it entertaining. Like, you know, have you guys seen The Biggest Little Farm? That's a good show.
Yeah.
If you need like a rowdy stoic to guest appear, I'll happily come on and cause some drama for you guys.
Definitely.
Sounds good.
Yeah. We don't shy away from the conflict as is part of the stoic philosophy. So we're in it.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. All right. So Drew Buck Miller, and I gave everyone permission to unmute themselves. So you have to unmute yourself again, Mike. Drew,
So I have a question. You were emphasizing the not removing too far from, you know, not escapism. And you mentioned, you know, bringing people in who have an entrepreneurial spirit. What I'm wondering about is, you know, with a lot of work going remote now, what does it look like, you know, say if someone were to come from the US and work, are you looking mainly for people who are self-employed, or what does it look like if someone's working remote from a company based, you know, I live actually like just south of you in Idaho. It's like, what would that look like across the borders? I'm not familiar with the, like how taxes work or if that's an issue.
Well, we've done the digital nomad thing for a lot of years, so we kind of know our way around that. And I think, you know, one situation we don't want to have is for people's income to be completely dependent on us, on the property and on the business. Just because that sets up some pretty gross dynamics over time where it's like there's kind of a super dependency that I don't know.
Is unhealthy.
Yeah, we've been there before too, and it's really not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as far as immigration and that kind of thing, we expect people to figure that out on their own. Like we generally are looking for people who are pretty self-sufficient, self-starters, you know, can figure things out. So we do have some Americans that are planning to come, and they are navigating that process by themselves. But for the most, yeah. And actually one Brit. So,
yeah, you know what? Actually, he's here. Daniel, if you want to pipe up with any of your progress with that, you can, but you also kind of make it obvious to me now that we need to have like a resource page or something for immigration.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as the self-employment goes, I mean, you can be on a tourist visa for a good length of time. And I think you by default get a 6-month visa if you're an American coming into Canada, something along those lines. So
6 months out of the year, I think is what's permitted.
So there is a way to do that at the beginning. As far as like super long-term permanent stay, that's something you got to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, that's something we should do, is put up an immigration page somewhere.
Yeah. And right now with COVID, borders are closed. So unless, people coming in from other countries would have to have a good precedent to be here in the eyes of immigration anyway.
Yeah.
Cool. Louise, you had a question.
Hi. Yeah. I was wondering what the capital requirements or budget will be anticipated to build all the common space projects you proposed in the video, ranging from the event center to the new dwellings to makerspace to the road?
Well, a fortunate benefit of the documentary is that there's a lot of, and the podcast and the events and everything that we're doing, is there's a lot of space for sponsorship. So what, and we've got a lot of experience with sponsorships as well. So I anticipate that a lot of the makerspace will be funded through sponsorships and donations. And we actually have a partner already on the team who does that, who kind of travels around and sets up makerspaces and innovation centers. He's already done one in Kaslo. So he knows how to do that. So we're probably going to use him as a resource for that. Then when it comes to the individual properties, well, maybe you want to take that.
Yeah. So we're currently in negotiations with several companies that do building, prefab, construction, and that sort of thing. So we will have more information about the specific costs soon. As far as what we're looking to raise to start is 2 million Canadian, and that's to acquire the property and do some updates. But that's not to build out everything that's in the video. That will probably be over several years and will require more funding. And we can't give a specific number of how much that will cost.
Well, our priority in the first year is definitely at least 4 new dwellings for just couples. So probably not ideal for families, but you know, you would get like a single kind of geodesic dome or something that you could move into and stay on.
We're looking at prefab houses, cabins, geodesic domes, tiny homes, like different options.
The other thing that's worth mentioning is the existing owners of the property own and or they operate a timber framing company. So they make timber frame homes and they have typically shipped them across throughout the States and Canada. Mm-hmm. But their mill is less than 5 minutes drive away from the property. And they've already got a lot of experience building. On the property. They've built a number of structures on the property already. So they're going to be a great resource for us for building and for keeping the costs down.
Mm-hmm. And that also keeps it local. You know, it solves a lot of the supply chain issues that a lot of companies have seen with COVID, because all the materials are local, all the labor is local.
But even with like the geodesic domes, there's so much opportunity for sponsorships, because suddenly, you know, if we have a variety of different types of dwellings, they become the showroom for these companies to use. They can send their people there. They can be included in the documentary series. Like there's a lot of exposure that they get for just donating those materials to us.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're looking to leverage a lot of different partnerships to make this happen.
Yeah.
And then to tag on a question, I was wondering what the current infrastructure is for that like plot of land, like internet, fiber, electricity, water, phone, all those sort of like modern amenities.
Yeah, so it's been run as a organic farm since the 90s at least. It already has 3 houses on it, which are fully functional and fully renovated. It has a bunch of barns and different structures for animals, you know, fencing. It has 3 wells and 3 septic tanks, one for each house. It has a grid connection, but it also has 2 bays of solar panels. So it produces its own energy, and then it doesn't have batteries, so at night it will buy energy back from the grid. And it ends up being that they basically pay very little at all, if at all, for energy over the year. So, and we will probably look at getting batteries so that we can be completely off-grid, optional. But yeah, it's already set up fully and fully functional. As far as internet, it currently has a Dish internet. We've talked to the local internet company about getting fiber, and it's about, I think, 5 kilometers away is the connection. So we just need to string the cable, those 5 kilometers, and, it'll just cost us, but that's within the budget.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Is JM in the call right now? Can you unmute yourself if you are? Okay, guess not. Well, he would
be the have one more to specific information. That, yeah.
Thanks,
Louise. Albert, you had a question.
Yeah. Hey, Mike and Yuvi. So, you know, I'm sure starting off, you guys are going to be utilizing fiat, the fund, and like when you get your village running, you guys could be using, you know, Canadian dollars or whatnot. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts on eventually issuing your own digital currency or utilizing crypto or blockchain technology.
Yes, love that idea.
We've had so many people ask us that.
I've made a coin of my own just for fun that's out there on the blockchain. Don't go looking for it. Really not a good investment. But yeah, we've thought about that because of the flexibility and the programmability of using a cryptocurrency on the property. We've also, I mean, I know that a lot of civilizations in the past and communities in the past have eventually created their own currency. With the technology that we have access to now, there's a huge amount of flexibility. So I'm excited about that idea, but is it a necessity for the first year or two? No. Mm-hmm. But I love the idea of everything having an economy inside of the village and to that, to an extent, the entire region of the Kootenays. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be really cool.
I think for the network aspect, that would be really great to have some sort of a token that is used across these types of villages all over the world.
Yeah.
Where, you know, people can trade accommodations, kind of have programs where you go visit each other and learn things or use each other's services. Yeah, there's definitely opportunity for that. It'll just be sometime down the road.
If anyone here has expertise on that, actually, that would be great. Reach out to me privately. Mm-hmm. We'll chat.
Very cool. Okay, Anna, you had a question. If you can unmute yourself. There you go. Oh, we're playing mute take. There you go.
Hi. I'm fascinated with the idea. And at the same time, I'm aware of so many other experiments in this field. So I'm very interested in how do you differ. Also, there are villages in Italy which are empty and they are very beautiful. So why not take over a village already existing?
Well, we're not trying to be the only one out there. We're not trying to create competitive dynamics against other smart villages. No. So we spent 4 or 5 years in Bulgaria and have traveled around Europe quite extensively. So we know about those abandoned villages all over the
world. Well, I'm Bulgarian, by the way.
Oh,
great. Yeah. So
nasty.
we decided that we would like to set this up in our home country where our family lives. But I think that people in different countries around the world can use the different available, you know, infrastructure and land and zoning and whatever that suits to each region. Mm. And I think that's the beauty of it. You know, there's some sort of different opportunities in every area that people should be utilizing.
Bulgaria has a huge advantage. I mean, they have entire villages that are completely abandoned and people are selling.
Same in Italy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, you can get your hands on property on an existing structure for only a couple of $1,000s. So it's attractive and there's lots of opportunity all over the world for this type of thing.
Yeah.
We're kind of taking a difficult route because Canada is a little more expensive and we're so mobile. We could do this in Mexico or we could do it in Bulgaria or something, but it needs to be feasible anywhere. I think this is a new way that human civilization could live. And so I recognize that there are some things that we're doing that are not exactly replicable for other people. You know, not everyone has a podcast that they can offer sponsorship on and get a bunch of free stuff. So, and not everyone might have the ability to crowdfund something like this. But a lot of families do have the ability to put their connections together, pool their resources and buy at least some level of acreage and do something like this themselves. So there's lots of little bits and pieces that you can do yourself. And that's what we hope to inspire people to do.
Mm-hmm. As far as what we're doing that's different, well, we're integrating technology. That's one of the things that's definitely different. Some of the eco-villages that we've looked at are trying to run away from technology. We don't see technology as evil or, you know, bad somehow. We want to integrate it just in a way that technology should be serving human nature and
out of
the bioregion and be out of the way. Yeah. Yeah. What else are we doing that's different? Well, we're integrating a lot of different aspects. Like the self, personal development is really big for us. Mm-hmm. And we are very developmentally focused. Rather than trying to present some sort of an ideology or some sort of perfect way of living that utopia. People need to follow, or, you know, institute some sort of a religion or utopia or, you know, specific political structure, we're very experimental. We're kind of agnostic in that sense. We just want to try different stuff and see what works.
I kind of like the idea of the burgundy robes, that we might just do that, but...
Yeah, it's been a running joke because
everyone thinks we're making a commune or a cult or something.
Not everyone, but once in a while we do get people like, oh, so is this a religious thing or is it a commune? It's just like, you know, people have their own associations that they come up with based on what they've seen. And so we've just started joking around with these purple robes, like, you know, when you come and visit in the visiting suite, we'll have the bathrobes be purple, just as an inside joke.
Cool. Emily.
Hi. Exciting to be here and hear about all of this. My question is around like initial investment. Like, are you, like, if I wanted to come up there and join, would I be renting a space or are you going to open it up for people buying land? Are they going to buy land? Are they just going to buy a structure? Like, what's your...
Legally, the path that's the most straightforward is to be looking for loans from our community to be able to buy the property. And then there will be multiple different types of businesses on the structure. And hopefully people who come to move there will also start their own businesses. So there are going to be different investment opportunities in the future. That said, if people are loaning us money, there are a lot of perks that we're kind of bringing into that. Like, if you want to rent or stay on the property or lease something for an extended period of time, you would get a discount if you're one of the original lenders.
And first priority, because there's actually been kind of an overwhelming demand for stays at the property, short, especially long-term stays. So we're trying to figure out how to manage that and how to prioritize, how to give those perks to the people that help us fund the initial round.
It's also a good filter mechanism to do the loaning instead of the initial investor, like to give equity away for the company that owns the land so quickly, because we're going to be living near each other all the time. So we need to make sure there's a functional, you know, it's not that we're looking for a certain culture or a certain type of person. We want diversity of ideas,
definitely.
But how good are people at conflict resolution? Like I want to learn that about people very quickly. And that,
how good are they at collaborating?
Yeah.
And
these are things that are very hard to teach, I think, and not necessarily a priority for us to like build people up from scratch. Like there's definitely something you can come into this with the set of skills and abilities that we'll prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it would be a loan. The way it's working with some people is that they're loaning, a larger chunk of money, and then we're figuring out what the equity would look like in the future. So a portion of that loan would convert into equity in the company that owns the land, which is kind of similar to like a community land trust, except it's owned by a company.
Yeah, it's a more simple version of it, because we've looked at doing a community land trust and talked to some people who've actually successfully set it up. And it's a very lengthy process, a lot of red tape. And, you know, we have a friend who spent $500,000 on lawyer fees and several years just to set up this like co-op ownership structure. So it's within the current system, it's quite a nightmare. So we're looking at simpler structures that kind of carry the same purpose.
Yeah. So a company that would own the assets, own the land, and has one singular business focus, which is essentially like renting and leasing the property, mm-hmm. or be almost like a real estate developer, which is something we're exploring. So that seems to me just to be the easiest route. So essentially people would be able to forgive a portion of their loan in the future if the rest of the community agrees, be able to convert a portion of that into equity.
So my, just a quick follow-up question, like my approach would be I would want to come up and stay for a chunk of time, mm-hmm. and feel out the land. And, you know, I live in Santa Cruz right now, so this is also like a jump in latitude. But yeah, so when are you guys opening it up for people to come and stay for months, or how is that?
If you're we're planning on doing renovations. We want to be living there by about the end of October or November. So we're going to spend the winter there. We're going to be doing renovations on the big house and actually pretty much all of the structures there.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully setting up new structures for visitors.
Yeah.
Making some space for RVs to park, because a lot of people have expressed interest in coming up in an RV and staying here for a while. So that will be a priority, creating some structures and spaces so that people can come and visit for shorter periods of time to feel it out and get to know everyone and see if it's a good fit for them.
And the initial lenders, really, there's one couple that we're talking with right now about the loan structure and the equity structure, and they want to come as soon as possible and are totally happy to be living there through the winter. So there is space. I mean, we definitely have the space for that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks. David Chilcott, you had a bunch of questions, if you can ask one of them.
So I'm most interested in kind of what you've just been talking about, kind of about the equity /loan/ business structures, and the relationship to ownership, equity, and decision-making. It's not really a well-formed question, but I'd love to hear a little more about how the formal and the informal structures align.
Other than what we've already said, we're still working out the details, because a big part of this is kind of letting it emerge in a way that makes sense for the people that are co-creating it with us. So rather than having this, like, we've got it all figured out and we've got this perfect top-down structure that everybody plugs into, we're saying it like, no, like the people who are coming and co-creating it with us, who are going to be stakeholders, why don't we just figure out what works between us, like as humans, as a relationship. And so it's been working out well so far. We've learned a lot and figured out a lot of the questions that were kind of unclear or that we were thinking about differently before. And after talking to people, we realized actually, oh, it's going to be better to do it this way. So it's really it's a living thing. It's not a static thing. So yeah, what we've said so far is our current way of thinking. As it evolves more and as we, you know, put things into contracts, then we will, you know, put out some updates in the future. But for now, this is where we're at.
Yeah, that makes good sense to me. The idea that rather than have policies or rules as a substitute for conversation, that you get skillful at having meaningful and authentic conversation.
Yeah. One of the things that we've been doing recently, so we have an online community, and in our online community this month, we have a theme of Indigenous wisdom. So we've been reading a bunch of books and having a bunch of conversations and doing podcast episodes around that theme. And, you know, just kind of noticing the differences between the Indigenous mindset and the Western mindset. Western mindset is hyper-structured, like everything has to be figured out and everything has to be based on rules. And people, because they are so reliant on rules, they actually end up being really out of touch with reality, with what's actually happening now in this moment with these people, you know, and what's emerging. And so we want to bring back that more of that connected mindset of what is actually emerging? What's happening? Like, what are the opportunities and possibilities here? How are things changing just as a result of us talking here? So it's kind of counterintuitive sometimes to people, but once they get into it, they realize that it really works. And it's something that doesn't scale, which is probably why corporations and, you know, these big institutions don't use it, because it is really reliant on the relationship between two or three or, you know, a small group of people. But in those kinds of configurations, I think it works really well. And the more people do it, the more skillful they get at it.
Yeah. Dunbar's number, about 120-ish, the number of folks you can actually have connected relationship with.
Yeah, and this is why the earlier question was like, how many people are you going to have living there? This is why we want to cap it at 50 adults. So that means that there's going to be several children and several neighbors that you have, close relationships with. There are some books that have been written by people who've set up co-housing communities, for decades all over the world. And that's the number that they came up with. 40 to 50 adults is the max that you want to have in a co-housing community. If you get over that, then it starts breaking down and there's just too many kind of clashing expectations and it's hard to come to consensus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, David. I'll follow up with that. How the John Verveke talks about ecology of practices and all these, like here at the Stoa, we have a wisdom gym where we're developing that. And you guys have a course, Rebel Wisdom has it. Was there any kind of like set in Monastic Academy, our buddy Daniel Thornton is a great example. He has circling embedded in their ecology. Are you guys going to have something like that available for the community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what would be in it? Would it be circling? Would it be meditation classes? Do you have like something fixed or you're waiting to see what emerges?
Well, we already do some version of circling every Thursday. Like it's kind similar. Of that same, like mm-hmm. that same check-in procedure that you do with circling, checking with yourself, checking with the room. But the subject is not generally constrained to any arena. It goes wherever it goes, wherever we feel like bringing it. And we might talk about external events and stuff, but we've got a lot of practice doing that. Would love to bring that into the physical space.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a form of collective intelligence.
Yeah.
And it only works in a small group. I think 15 is the most number of people that you can have until you start to break the coherence.
To me, there are basically two really important schools of thought on personal development. It's the interpersonal, interrelational aspect, and then the solo, in silent darkness in your room kind of work, like that meditative or psychedelics route. So those two things we have quite a lot of experience with. More so the collective aspect in the last couple of years, but we used to have a meditation app. UV teaches meditation every Monday. Like that's a big part of what we do already. So bringing that into the physical space is pretty natural and easy.
Mm-hmm. And we plan to invite a lot of other facilitators as well, because, I think that it's important to have different modalities and different perspectives so that it doesn't get centralized. And there's already been a lot of interest, from the people that we've previously interviewed on the podcast and just people from our network who've come up and put up their hand and said, hey, I facilitate this sort of practice or this sort of thing. I'd love to be part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So we have about 10 minutes left. I'm curious how long that video is, Mike, the one with the aerial. Do you want to pivot to that soon or?
Sure. Yeah, it is 4 minutes long. Wow, that's almost the exact same length as the other video. Yeah, 4 minutes.
So maybe we'll field one more question. How about a statement? Christian, you had a statement about the interpersonal aspect. Would you want to unmute yourself? And
yeah, sure. I just wanted to say it feels like the interpersonal aspects will be important considering that the city itself is already hyper-individualized. So it kind of goes back to like Peter's questions, like what are some specific things you've been working on? But I feel like you guys already touched upon that, but how is that like aspect really important to you guys?
Yeah, I actually want to expand into something that we haven't talked about yet from that question. So my vision for the long term of this place is to have basically a school. So I've been thinking a lot about how children are raised and how we're educated, how we're basically programmed by society. And I think that it's not optimal for the kind of world that we're going into. It was suitable for a more stable society, for a more stable climate, but now that things are becoming more chaotic and things are changing very quickly, I think people need to be more adaptive and more responsive. So we need to change our parenting practices and our education practices to fit that, so that, you know, our children and adults can thrive in this new world that we're going into. So that's my vision for the long term, like for the next, you know, 20 years or something, is setting up a school. And the way that I see this is like, how do we make regenerative humans? You know, in the past, people have talked about sustainability as kind of the green approach to how we relate to the environment. But I don't think that's enough, because sustainability means that we are maintaining something. And maybe we're maintaining things that are not optimal. So regenerative means restoring ecosystems to health. So you are an ecosystem too. You're, as an individual, like, you are a collection of organs and different systems that work together. And then communities and all the interrelationships in those communities is also an ecosystem. And then there's the broader ecosystem of the bioregion, you know, all the plants and animals and natural cycles in that system. And so the relationships between those macro and micro systems are really important. And the relationships within them are also extremely important. So the health of those relationships is what makes the whole thing run. So I think that interrelational dynamics are absolutely at the core of all of this, and not just between humans, but also in how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to all the living beings in the bioregion. So to be more specific, I think a lot of it is emergent. A lot of it is in the moment, while you're relating to each different living thing or system, you're figuring out how to do it optimally. I don't think it's a top-down thing. So it's a lot of practice, basically. Yeah. I hope that answers it, and I hope it's not too nebulous.
Cool. So I'll ask the last question, and then maybe we can pivot to the video. And a lot of people are dropping, so we didn't get to all the questions, so I'm sorry. But a lot of people are dropping advice too in the chat. So if you want to change, save the chat before you guys leave, you can do that, I believe. Or I can send it to you after the fact. So the question I had is, it's pretty simple. What is your greatest concerns about this project, things you're most worried about, and what are the things you're most excited about?
Great question.
Yeah, I would think government interference. We want, you know, if here's an example, we're doing this Tesla car sharing program because we partnered with another company who already has a fleet of Teslas. And we were thinking, like, what does it cost to actually get one? So I looked into buying one, and I found out, like, the Canadian government taxes these sustainable cars with about $12,000 on each purchase. So, you know, there's a lot of lip service when it comes to government intervention and acceptance and help that I think is not reflective in the taxes and not reflective in how they actually support programs. And I think if we got in the way of any type of, like, big business, we could face some resistance.
On the other hand, we are in talks with the local government. I mean, this is a very small town. It's not a big city. So I think there will be a lot more opportunity to innovate and work with the local government and actually be able to adjust the regulations to make this thing possible. And so far it's been, you know, the reception of our project has been very positive. And so there's actually another eco village on Vancouver Island called Our Eco Village. And they've been doing this for a couple decades, and they've worked with the local government to actually change some of the regulations to enable their project, because they have had a very positive effect on the community. So the government sees it as a good thing. So I hope to do the same, you know, to establish relationships with the local structures to make it possible. As far as what am I most afraid of or most challenged by? You know, this is funny, but the perception of what we're doing matters, because when people come with a preconceived notion of what this is, it changes how they interact again. You know, it changes that relationship dynamic. So we've definitely had some funny reactions, mostly positive, but a few funny ones. And so I see that as an ongoing challenge, that how do we storytell in a way that accurately describes what we're doing and helps people to understand where they fit in what we're doing and how it affects them. So that's part of the reason why we want to do this documentary, so that we can, you know, transparently show what we're doing. And that's part of the reason why we want to create templates and document processes for how we're doing things so that we can show people, this is how it's structured. And, you know, you can learn from this, you can take it. Or even just like if people are not interested in setting it up themselves, they can see how we do things and why we do things in a certain way. So yeah, a lot of transparency. And also inviting people to come out and stay. I mean, that's going to be a priority, holding a lot of events so that people can just come and see it for themselves. That it's not a closed community or, you know.
Sex cult.
The meta-modern wild, wild country. That's assumed, mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. We have about 4 minutes left. Want to watch the...
Sure. There's no audio here, so we can continue to answer questions because this video doesn't have audio.
Still a road trip. Yep. Ron, we will.
So yeah, any other questions? We can keep going here.
All right.
We can talk about what we're seeing as well.
Yeah, I'm curious what like kind of a play-by-play maybe.
Can you see my mouse?
It's hidden in the corner now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see your mouse a little bit.
Okay, so along the top here is the dividing line of the property. We're facing south, now we're facing north. So there's a southern property that's bigger than the current one, than this one that we're looking at potentially acquiring in the future if funding permits. You can see there's a lot of farmland.
It's mostly surrounded by crown land, which means government-owned land, so it's just forest.
Yeah.
It's just at the edge of a town, about 5 kilometers out of town.
This is the 5-bedroom house. These are the solar panels here. There's a kennel for dogs. There's like barns. All kinds of stuff for having animals and stuff. They used to be well known in the region for being deer farmers. They had hundreds of deer on the property.
And then at different times had horses and cows and pigs and all kinds of different animals.
Yeah.
So yeah, the current owners have a lot of experience in farming, which is cool. There's a bunch of vegetables being grown there right now, organic. And this is the river where, there's a small stream that runs from the river. So we have access to the water from that stream as well for irrigation. And there are also several wells on the property.
The property actually extends up along this line above the ridge. So it's not all flat. A good portion of it is also this forested area. About 40% of it actually is that forested area. And that's probably, that portion is unzoned. So it's probably where we're gonna start building some of the structures.
Mm-hmm.
This is on that side. This is one of the 2-bedroom houses. And then there is this path that connects the 2-bedroom house to the second 2-bedroom house. And along this path is where we're thinking of building a lot of the different structures, the 4 domes that we start at the beginning.
Or tiny homes or cabins. Or,
yeah. And so it's quite a lot of space. And then up here is the path leading to what's currently being used as an Airbnb. This is a 2-bedroom house here. There's water, there's wells and storage areas and all kinds of stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the fact that part of the property is unzoned is very handy because it means there are fewer limitations on what we can build and how many structures we can build. The other side of the property is zoned agricultural. So it does have limitations, but we are going to work with the local government to change the zoning so that we can have more structures among the farmland as well.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's about 2 hours from the local airport.
It's about an hour and a half from Nelson, which is the nearest city.
Mm-hmm.
5-minute walk even to the nearest gas station.
Mm-hmm. Not quite a 5-minute walk, yeah. But yeah, like 5-minute drive.
Tons of kind of nature activities. There's a white rafting company nearby. And we're surrounded by crown land for quite a long ways going up north.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of places for hiking and dirt biking and stuff if you're into that.
Yeah, there are 2 national parks just literally, you know, in the backyard. It's the world center for cat skiing. I think it's where cat skiing was invented. So it's this kind of tractor thing that drives up the mountain and then people ski from there. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot of winter activities as well.
I think sometime either this year or next year, there's going to be a big kind of electric vehicle conference happening that one of our partners is helping to organize. So there'll be all types of different electric vehicles there, ATVs, dirt bikes, boats. E-boats is one thing we're really excited about having in this region, because a lot of the lakes connect in a network. So there's a lot of terrain to explore through boating.
Yeah. And so Kaslo is an interesting town, this closest town. There's a lot of young kind of entrepreneurial people living there. So for how small it is, there's a lot of innovation happening. Mm-hmm. There's a new innovation center that just opened there. And Nelson obviously is a cultural center in the region where there's a lot of arts and festivals and things like that happening.
I just clicked replay here so we can stop anytime. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we passed the hour, so we probably should close out. Any kind of closing thoughts for us here today, Mike?
So we're doing a kind of a social event tonight that Tyson is going to be hosting. This relates to the Indigenous wisdom. We'll do breakout rooms and stuff. So we'll be there tonight at 6 o'clock.
6 p.m. Pacific, which will be 9 Eastern.
Yeah, and where can they find out about that? Tyson?
Tyson, can you post can you post the Zoom registration link in the chat?
Yeah, one moment.
Thank you.
Oh, JM is here now. Okay.
Hi, JM.
Hi. Sorry, I was in and out of meetings. Good to see you guys.
You came up quite a number of times.
Here I am. Connect with me on LinkedIn, everyone. I'll post my link.
Yeah, so calls to action here. Check out the page, futurethinkers.org/village. Mm-hmm. Tyson's going to post the link for the event tonight. I think that's kind of it. If you want to ask us more questions, we'll be in there tonight. Maybe we can hang out a little later. Mm-hmm. We're going to be, maybe that's not worth saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still in the middle of our fundraising, but we've got more than half pledged already, so it's going quite well. But if this is something that you're interested in contributing to, then get in touch.
Yeah. Great. And I put the links in the show notes, or not the show notes, the chat right now.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you for hosting us. This is awesome. We love what you're doing here. So yeah, great to be a part of it.
Yeah. I'll make some closing announcements for the Stoa in a moment, but Mike Uvie, thanks so much for coming to Stoa. If you ever need the Stoa or me to help you with this project, you know, for whatever reason, just reach out. I'd be happy to help. I'm really supportive of what you guys are doing.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So some upcoming announcements at the Stoa. We're actually doing something kind of relevant to what was just spoken about. We're doing empathy circle training. I don't know if anyone can see that. So Edwin Rutsch, who does these empathy circles to kind of create like your listening muscle, greater empathy. We're having the Medic Mediation Campfire on Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time throughout October. We're doing the training there. So if you're interested in that, you can just RSVP to that, which would be pretty cool. Excited for that. And we can trade notes on how this stuff goes, Mike and Yuvie as well. And at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so looks like our events are not going to cross each other. We got another event coming up in an hour, Glimpses of Communitas with Donna Rodriguez, which is another sort of WeSpace kind of collective presencing type thing. You can RSVP there. We have tons of events at the Stoa. Check it out, stoa.ca. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do that as well. So again, Mike Uvie, everyone, thank you so much for coming to the Stoa today. And Mike, if you want to save the chats, you can just click on the little dots and you can save it. A lot of people are dropping some goodies.
Oh yeah. One more thing I forgot. Everyone's leaving. Well, if you want to go join our community, go to futurethinkers.org/friend and you'll get 2 months off. We charge just because we have facilitators helping us organize the content and stuff, but it's $5 a month. Usually if you want to check it out for 2 months, then follow that link.
But did you give the link?
futurethinkers.org/friend.
Yeah. That gives 2 months free.
Cool. Right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
If you like this content, you might want to check out our 7 Ways to Adapt to the Future guidebook. Get it for free at futurethinkers.org/signup. You might also want to check out our Future Thinkers membership area. We have courses there to help you adapt to the changing world, build resilience, upgrade culture and society, and create meaning and purpose in your life. As well, you'll get access to our community, all of our unreleased content, private Zoom calls, live Q&As with guests, workshops and events, and more. Just go to members.futurethinkers.org. And if you enjoyed this video, please like, share, and comment. It really helps out our show more than you know. And if you want more like it, then subscribe and hit that bell icon to be notified of new videos. See you next time.